I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you on a Football Friday. Baseball, big story this weekend. Tonight, Game 6, Astros and the Red Sox. It'll be Nathan Uvalde for the Red Sox, Luis Garcia for the Astros. The first three games of this series, the starting pitchers combined for 16 outs. Not 16 innings, 16 outs for the Astros. Framber Valdez was able to right the ship for himself. From Game 1 to Game 5, he was great. In Game 5, Luis Garcia said yesterday that Framber may have shown him the roadmap to getting his groove back as well.
He did a very good job yesterday, attacking the strike zone and executing his pitches. So I think that's the thing that I can get to me and try to do tomorrow.
This is the scariest thing for me, Seth, for these next 48 hours, is the Astros in this, I'll call it since 2017, this title window that they've been in. We know there's been a lot of change with the team and with the pitching staff and things like that. When they've been in these situations before in these long series, league championship series, World Series, and they're going into the back end of the series where it goes six or seven games, they've been in a lot of six and seven game series over the course of this title window, we'll call it. When they've been going into game sixes and game seven in previous years, it's been with, you know, in 2017, it was with Justin Verlander and Charlie Morton. In the World Series, it was with Justin Verlander and Lance McCullers. You know, McCullers was an all-star that year. In 2019, you had Gerrit Cole and Justin Verlander. You're trying to win a game with Verlander and Cole. Even last year, you know, you had McCullers, you had Greinke, you had Framber, who was pitching really, really well. You're trying to bring the ship into the shore, granted at home, but still, with Luis Garcia and Jose Urquidy. You know, like this is the scariest thing for me of the next 48 hours. There is not a hammer that's going to be able to just yank one of these games by the throat and that I feel great about doing it. Either of them could do it. I don't feel great about either of them actually doing it.
I watched an interview of Ben Verlander, Justin Verlander's older brother, who's interviewing AJ Hinch. And AJ was talking about what it was like trying to pull Verlander from a game or Gerrit Cole, or Lance McCullers, or Zach Greinke, you know, and he reeled off that same list of names that you just mentioned, and there's a certain cachet there. There's a certain cockiness, right? Yeah. There's a certain bravado, and it's sometimes hard to really to see that or feel that with these guys yet, because they are, even though Urquidy is not inexperienced even in the World Series, obviously, you just don't get that same. They're not at that same level now where you feel like, oh, yeah, this guy's going to come in and he's just going to shut these guys down. And that's why I typically wouldn't say something like, well, hey, Luis Garcia could be inspired by Framber Valdez. I think it's valid in this moment, just because this could very much be the pivotal moment over the course of these 3 days, where two young players, and well, Framber's not young, but you know what I'm saying, yeah, where Framber and Luis Garcia kind of come into their own and just realize, okay, yeah, this is it. Like this is our team now. Maybe Framber and Luis Garcia and Jose Urquidy don't quite understand yet or realize that, like, yeah, they're the guys. They need to be those pitchers that they've seen do these incredible things in the playoffs. That it's not just a nice story when Urquidy comes in and pitches well in the World Series. We're depending on that now. And I think Framber just Framber set the tone in all the right ways for that. So I'm irrationally excited about watching Luis Garcia tonight. I am fully expecting and anticipating one of the best performances of his career.
Well, someone put the theory out there, like, you know, it could have just been that these guys were amped up for the you know, their first game in this ALCS. And I guess they're young pitchers. So to some degree, I would say, okay, maybe there's some validity. And, you know, Framber got it out of his system in game one, and he kind of settled down in game five. But these are guys who pitched in the – all of these guys have pitched in the postseason before, including Garcia last year. You know,
yeah.
So
last year was so weird. You know what's hard for me, Sean? You know what's difficult? Is that I see Dodgers writers say things like, well, look, this just shows you how hard it is after the grueling grind of a postseason run. And your first instinct is to say, yeah, it was a 62-game regular season, but I have to agree with them. There was something about last year that was particularly grueling, even the postseason appearance by the Astros last year, and I know there's experience from the previous year too, it was different than this year, where the Astros are one of the best teams in the league, and now the guys you're depending on are Urquidy, Luis Garcia, Framber Valdez. This series in particular, because Lance McCullers has disappeared, that all of a sudden that those are your top three guys. It's a whole different level that these guys aren't necessarily accustomed to.
Is it as weird for you to watch highlights of last season, like for baseball? For example, Carlos Correa's walk-off home run against the Rays. That's gotten shown a few times this postseason because Carlos has had some big hits in this ALCS, including a home run to give them the lead in game one. When they show highlights from last year's postseason in all these empty stadiums that aren't the home stadiums of either of the two teams, it really makes me think, boy, how we were able to, or at least for me, I can't believe I was able to normalize that. You know what I mean? Like, I can't believe that in the midst of the postseason that I wasn't talking more about how weird, and maybe I was, but it just feels so weird to go back and watch it now, because we've been reconditioned to normal baseball again, right?
Right.
You know,
we've been
reconditioned to crowds being in the stands and it being loud at home and there being boos on the road and it being played in actual Minute Maid and Fenway, not in San Diego for a neutral site for both these teams. To go back and watch highlights of last year it's mildly depressing, but in so much as it's depressing to look at an empty stadium like that, but it's weird for me to go back and look at those old highlights, man.
It's amazing how anything can become normal after a little bit of exposure. We've seen that with the Texans, whatever the Deshaun Watson situation is, where it's beginning, going into training camp, no way, there's no way you'd show up. What would that look like? It would be so weird. And after a while, it took, about 2 weeks for it to just get normal, Sean? And it was so normal that Deshaun ended up making it unnormal again by saying, that's right, that's a word, unnormal. Unnormal again by asking why everybody was always filming him like they normally do.
Right.
And then it got kind of weird again, but then it got normal again. That's where I was watching Sopranos last night. I'm going through the first season.
Oh, where
of Sopranos.
Are you? How deep are you into it?
I just realized that I never actually watched the first season of Sopranos.
Are you serious?
I kept thinking, man, I got to about episode 6. I was like, man, I have forgotten a lot of this. And then I realized, oh, yeah, I just started watching it with Brandy because everybody else was watching it. And it was harder to – it wasn't so easy to get the back episodes back then, you know?
Yeah,
At least as far as I – it wasn't
on demand,
on demand and everything.
Yeah.
So anyway, you know, Tony's describing his childhood, Tony Soprano, the gangster, for the kids that don't know this show, I'm going to explain it to you. Tony Soprano's a gangster, and he's explaining his childhood to the therapist, and all this really weird stuff. Tony is explaining, my mom threatened to stab me in the eye, but she never actually did it. What? What's so weird about that? you grow up in a household, and when you don't have any different perspective on things, you don't know what's weird and what isn't.
That's normal.
That's how we are in Houston sports.
That's so true. That is so true. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Football Friday. We brought up in the previous segment how athletes opening restaurants in the city has seemed to be a harbinger of them leaving. Deshaun Watson opening up a couple cheesesteak joints. He now wants to be traded. James Harden opened up 13, his restaurant. Yeah. He's now gone. By the way, thumbs up from Brandon Scott on 13. He has eaten there. He said it's really good. I've heard it's really good. I've heard it's really good.
So did, is somebody worried about Biggio now?
No, Correa. Oh, okay, someone's worried about Correa. They said, does anybody know if Correa is opening a restaurant in Houston anytime
soon? That would be
soon?
The telltale. Can you imagine? I'd like to. Well, look at even Wendy Merciless. The day he was cut. He goes out and he's helping fund one of the schools here. It was a Yes Academy, was it not?
Something like it.
Yeah, he was donated a bunch of money to a school here.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I could see Correa simultaneously announcing his departure and the brand new opening of his restaurant.
Oh, my God. 713-572-4610. Hey, quick factoid, Seth. The Astros in this recent run, this recent window of dominance since 2017, 3-0 in game sixes of the ALCS. 3-0. Because the one ALCS that they – that the one ALCS against the Red Sox that they got beaten five games, they didn't have to play a game six. So you may be saying, well, how can they be 6-0? They've only made two World Series. Well, two of them, they went on to the World Series. The other one last year, if you recall, they were down 3-0 against the Rays. They won the next three and then lost in game seven. So 3-0, including – the last time they clinched a game six in the ALCS at home, we all remember this moment.
Altuve has just sent the Astros to the World Series.
So there you go. 2 years ago, I'm going to say 2 years ago to the day, because pretty, you know, it's 2 years ago to game six of the ALCS in 2019.
That was a pretty special moment.
That's great,
especially during it versus. As much as I love the Yankees, gosh, can't get enough of those lovable scrappy underdogs.
They're plucky, yeah.
Barely any money to get by, right. But to do it versus them, and then to continue. Nobody could have predicted at the time that would spawn profane chants that would echo and resonate throughout the league. That would then lead it to feel even that much better every time. Sean, do you remember the 2015 through, or I'm sorry, 2000, really it was in 2017 through 19. I used to be upset that the Yankees weren't as hateable as they used to be. That I kind of liked the Yankees. And even though Aaron Judge always annoyed me a little bit, for the most part, the large bulk of them I liked and appreciated. I'm kind of glad that everything turned out the way it did, because now I despise the Yankees.
Yes.
Now I can't find a single likable thing about them.
The world is normal again.
Yeah.
It's good. J.J. Watt met with the media yesterday. He talked about why Arizona, talked about the atmosphere in Arizona behind the scenes, and he used the C word. That's next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Well, I saw a ton of potential. I mean, obviously, like I've said all along, you have to have a quarterback in this league to have a chance, and Kyler's a great young quarterback with so many skills. I saw talent all over the place, and then obviously after I signed, we added even more talent. So I saw opportunity, and I saw a team that was moving the right direction and that I could hopefully come and help move even further in that direction, and it's been everything that I expected and more so far. And I'm really enjoying it. I'm looking forward to continuing to work to make us even better.
That was J.J. Watt in his Zoom call with the Houston media yesterday talking about why he chose Arizona. I got to give J.J. some credit, Seth. I know I was a little incredulous when he chose to go to the Arizona Cardinals. Not that they were a bad football team, but I think we were all, and a lot of people were working under the assumption that J.J. was going to pick from a very short list of Super Bowl favorites at the time. And they were not that. I mean, they were a fun football team with a good young quarterback in a really, really tough division. I think that's worth mentioning. And at least so far, and granted, we're a third of the way through the season, so there's still a lot of football to be played. But so far, what JJ just said there, yeah, I would imagine everything that he saw with Arizona is exactly what he's thought it was going to be. I give him a lot of credit that he was able to foresee at least something six games into the season is a team that definitely is on the short list of Super Bowl contenders.
You know, when I had talked to JJ about selecting a team, the one thing that he told me, it kind of just shows like his experience in the league. And this is like something that you might have read on 538.com or something. He said, you know, when it comes to ring chasing, it's not so simple and easy to pick who's gonna win the Super Bowl. And even he didn't mention Pat Mahomes or Tom Brady or anything, but that was the general thing he was saying was that if you don't, you know, unless you're going to Tom Brady and maybe the Chiefs, and I don't think either of those teams were options for JJ that I know of, that the idea that you're gonna pick the winner is kind of foolhardy, because every year there are surprises. Every year good teams are bad. Every year bad teams are good. So I think he understood that really first and foremost he needed to be sure where he went was the right fit. And I think the two big things that you look at with Arizona, I'll say three things. One, he mentioned the quarterback, right? But the other two huge things are that, A, he would have another good pass rusher on the line with him in Chandler Jones. And B, he would be playing for Vance Joseph, who was here in Houston with Wade Phillips. And Vance Joseph knows how to utilize JJ. I think it is interesting that JJ, when I've watched so far this year, JJ's playing a much more conventional and disciplined style of football. I think JJ understands that he can't freelance quite the way he used to. It's just he doesn't have that same surreal explosiveness coming off of a block that would let him get away with backdooring blocks and everything. So in the games I've watched, he looks like he's played more disciplined, but he also knows that he knows Vance Joseph's defense. He knows what Vance wants to do. And then it was at the very least a team that could be competitive. So I think all those things mattered just as much as, you know, he wasn't trying to handicap the Super Bowl winner.
No, clearly not. And if my guess is if he wanted to go to Tampa Bay or Kansas City and he came to them and said, oh, look, I'll play for the minimum, I just want to win a ring, they probably would have found room for J.J. Watt at the right price. But you're absolutely right. And I think a couple of other things, and you brought this up before too, that he wanted to go somewhere where he enjoyed football again. You know, that was a real key to him, and clearly we're going to hear what he thinks about Arizona behind the scenes in just a second. I would think too, Seth, look, as a you're the former player, so you can tell much better than I can, but maybe guys when they're chasing rings just want to get, some guys just want to get it any way they can, and by going to New England the last several years, or in this case going to Tampa Bay, they feel like they've got the best chance of checking that box. I got to imagine that if this Arizona team goes on to win a Super Bowl with J.J. Watt, there's going to be a greater level of satisfaction that he went somewhere that was not thought of as a layup to go get a Super Bowl, that he was part of something that, with a young quarterback, he's going to wind up having been part of something if they go on to win, where this will now be the team in the NFC that's being talked about as the premier team over the next few years.
Sean, I've talked to athletes before, and I think this might surprise some people, and this isn't like a universal thing, but I think especially for athletes who pay attention to sports media and you know, are actual sports fans themselves, and JJ's shown through the years that he's an all-around sports fan. He's tweeting about English soccer on Saturday mornings. He's tweeting about hockey all the time and everything. I think there's a healthy respect for not wanting to pull a Durant to the Warriors. feel too. Like, and obviously basketball is always going to be more exaggerated than any other sport, but I think that that does weigh into some guys' minds as far as like, okay, like, let's do this the real way, let's do the organic way, if only because I don't want to be seen as a guy that just hopped onto a championship. I think in football, and I told a player this once, I was like, you gotta listen, I said, listen, I don't want to say you're no Kevin Durant, but you're no Kevin Durant. And like, they're not, in football especially, they're not going to judge you for it the way they did, because it's just different. Not one player makes such a huge impact unless you're a quarterback. And you're not going to get judged as harshly for it. But I do think there is kind of a satisfaction in feeling like, yeah, you were the magical, as opposed to like going to New England back in the day. You can go to another place and be one of those magical things that needed to be added to the mix. Yep. Like, wow, yeah, this guy really made a difference. This guy, wow, his veteran leadership. Think about Carlos Beltran to the Astros.
Yeah.
Contributed very little on the field in that World Series season as the season went along. They buried his glove at one point. But he is looked at and viewed as, like all cheating scandals aside, is one of the guys that kind of put them over the top. Brian McCann, same way, yeah. Right? He was, Brian McCann calls a great game and everything as a catcher, but it was his veteran leadership that people remember that was part of that magical thing that needed to happen.
I throw Reddick in there too. That was kind of that free agency class. Yeah. It was Reddick and McCann who they traded for, and then Carlos Beltran. Here's one more from J.J. Watt. Here's J.J. Watt on the atmosphere behind us. Take a listen for the magic word here, the Arizona Cardinals.
I think we obviously have a very special group of players. I think that there's a ton of talent on this team. But I think the thing that's really making this thing go so far is just the business-like atmosphere of every single day. Guys come in, they go to work, they do their job. Cliff sets a great culture where he... Bing. He handles what he handles, and then he lets everybody else handle what they handle. He trusts us to do our jobs. He trusts his coaches to do their jobs. And I think that there's a belief and a knowledge that we come in every day and we do our work. And the next day you come in, you do your work, and then Sunday you go out there and you try and win a football game, and then you just turn the page, and the next day you're back to work doing the same thing. And I think that it's – nobody here is complaining. Nobody here is – making excuses. You know, last week we had all the COVID and everything. I think it's just every single day is work-like. I mean, it's been awesome. I mean, we're 6-6-0, and nobody's asked for a victory Monday. Nobody's asked, you know, why aren't we doing this? Why aren't we doing that? Everybody just, we just come in, do our work, and then go out there and play.
All right, so that's J.J. Watt. You know, Seth, the amazing thing is you can have a championship culture, you can have a winning culture with DeAndre Hopkins on your team. Who knew? Who knew that you could actually
Sean,
have a great culture with Hopkins?
What about the baby mamas? We can't have anybody who's capable of procreating on the team. Oh, no.
Evidently, Cliff Kingsbury, pro-baby mama. And it works.
The word culture, okay, did JJ consciously use the word culture in that as a shot at Jack Easterby, the former culture coach, or whatever the hell
it
he
didn't,
was?
It's a character fair question. Coach. It didn't sound
I don't think he did.
I feel like
no,
it's,
yeah,
it's, I, we're bludgeoned over the head with it here, Seth, because you feel like they're going nowhere with the culture. Right? Culture, 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 and yet every bit of news that seems to come from this team is weird or controversial. I think it's a buzzword that's probably used in 32 buildings. It's just the ones that happen to be winning can tout their culture because they're winning football games.
You know what JJ said there was when he said nobody's asked for a victory Monday, you know, like nobody's asked for a day off after a victory or what have you. That is the danger sometimes with some quote-unquote veteran leadership is you you bring in guys who have been good players in the league and are good dudes, except that they're also very much about like, hey, man – like, hey, man, we need a day off, coach. Like, that they also, which is true. Sometimes they need to be that guy, but there's a way to go about it. And sometimes guys have their vision in their mind of what a veteran is, and it's more on the, like, on the NFLPA side of things. Like, I'm going to look out for the players, which is good, but there's a way to go about it. Like, usually I played when I was a rookie, Clyde Simmons was a much older player at that point. It might have been one of the last year or two of his career. But he was, when he would talk to Coughlin, about getting a day off or something, it was very discreet and very private. And you never knew that it was Clyde that was at the root of it all. Like, Clyde was very secretive about when he was the guy that got the guys a day off. He never wanted it to be, you know, players versus the coach or anything like that. So he was looking out for the players, but he never wanted to set the tone, like, bad for the young guys.
Because
the young guys will latch on to that. If a rookie sees Ed Reed or somebody else, like, whining or complaining, then all of a sudden the rookie starts whining and complaining.
Yeah, Ed Reed.
You got to balance all these things out.
The anti-Simmons, Ed Reed. that's good. See,
like, you don't want a veteran leader telling the young guys how stupid the coaches all
true,
are. Even if they are.
True.
Even if they are that
true,
stupid.
True.
Yeah.
No, I have great respect for Clyde Simmons now, because I know if I was the one who went and got everybody a day off, I'd be like, you guys enjoying this day off I got you? Huh? I'd be bragging about it.
I just remember sitting in the meeting room, and it was, and he told the D-line very discreetly, and he told us, like, threatened to keep it quiet, that he'd had a talk. He wanted a little bit of credit.
Yeah.
But he didn't want to, you know, make a big deal out of it or anything.
Yeah. So J.J. Watt met with reporters yesterday. Whitney Mercilus had his first press conference as a Green Bay Packer. They tried to get Whitney Mercilus to do a Randall Cobb. At first, he held off, but then, boy, you're going to want to hear what he has to say about his experience in Green Bay thus far compared to Houston. That's next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
From the Twin Peaks studio, it's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Whitney, you know, he's a pass rusher. So when it comes to pass rushing, you know, I think there's obviously some schematic stuff for him to figure out, but if we can get him, you know, 15 to 20 rushes at least in this first game, I think it'd be a big, you know, big plus for our squad. You know, as far as fitting in, you know, guys like that, they want to come to a winning team, you know, and when you go from 1-5 to 5-1, it's a whole new outlook on life, I think.
That's Aaron Rodgers talking about his newest teammate, Whitney Mercilus. Whitney Mercilus had his first practice as a Green Bay Packer. Boy, the social media account for the Green Bay Packers was celebrating the signing of Whitney Mercilus big time yesterday. I don't know if they have Sunday ticket up in Green Bay, if they've watched the last couple of years, but we'll see. Maybe there's a little rejuvenation that goes on with Whitney Mercilus up there. But he met with the media, Whitney did yesterday. Now, They tried to get Whitney Mercilus in this press conference, Seth. They tried to get him at the very beginning. If, let's just go back in time to the end of July. To the end of July when Randall Cobb was traded right before training camp to the Green Bay Packers from the Houston Texans. Let's relive the magic of Randall Cobb in his first Green Bay press conference back up with the Packers.
I can breathe again. I've seen the other side. And I'm excited to be back here, and I'm excited. I'm smiling. It's funny. My teammates say, you act like you just got out of prison. I said, well, I'm very, very, very excited to be here. That's nothing against Houston.
Yeah, sure, it's not. Nothing against Houston.
I just compared it
to prison. That's all.
I basically conceded that, yeah, it was like getting out of prison. But no, nothing against them.
No disrespect to the prison, yeah.
Yeah, like if when somebody is recently divorced and you say, oh, sorry about their divorce, and they're like, it was like getting out of prison. Nothing against her.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly what it was. All right, so the media tried to get Whitney Mercilus.
Did you happen to hear what Randall Cobb said after he?
Oh, man, we're not going to walk into that one. But, I heard because, I was at the Texans and whatnot. But, I enjoyed my time there. The fans, they embraced me ever since I got in there, and it was great, man. A lot of great players that I've gotten to play with during my time, and I've seen a lot of changes. From Kubiak to O'Brien to now Cully. So one thing about me, I know how to adapt really easy, do what's expected, and understand the culture and all that. And, not everybody's the same. Everybody has their different philosophies and all that. So, and all you have to do is just be able to respect it. Not each franchise is equal. In regards, everybody loves to do their different thing and whatnot. So, with that being said, I'm just grateful to be here. Been accepted with open arms. Love it. The energy is it's amazing, honestly. It's like it just pumps new life because I've only seen the same four walls for years, and to see something different is pretty cool.
Same four walls. So no mention directly of prison from Whitney Mercilus.
That was the perfect Anthony Fauci press conference when you ask like how has somebody been able to survive through multiple administrations?
Yeah,
and like let's ask you about something like don't answer anything
right.
That's going to be
words. Here's some words. How about these words? I'm going to mix in culture. Words.
I was just trying to envision what that was like when Randall Cobb said that, like how it was first, like how it was first relayed on the team. You know, back in the day, it would have been ESPN would have been on and in the training room, and it would have come on, and everybody would have looked at each other, and somebody was saying like, "Oh,
right."
This, I'm guessing somebody was on their phone in the training room or the locker room, and all of a sudden you're getting dressed and you hear, "Oh." And then everybody gathers around and you watch somebody hits play again and you watch Randall Cobb say what he said. Yeah, there were no moments from what Whitney said there. Other than there's a different, I guess.
Well, I got I more. Hey, just saying, so you know, I got a little more from Whitney, but go ahead. Continue with your
thoughts.
Oh,
okay.
Continue.
Okay, so as far as that one,
yeah.
I didn't think anything he said there was all that noteworthy other than the different energy or what have you.
Yeah.
But realistically, I think he was just saying it's a completely different environment because he's been literally inside those same four walls for a decade.
I agree with you on what he just said there. So Whitney did a good job there. Whitney went on to get asked further questions, which led to more comparisons between the environment in which he resides now versus the environment in which he resided for the last nine seasons.
How much game do you feel like you have left?
I feel like I got a lot, man. Felt great out there today, and it's just it feels like revitalized. The youngness in me is back, because your new environment. You feel the vibe of the team. It's not heavy. It's not a heavy cloud or anything like that.
Does that come from going from a team that maybe isn't going that same direction to now you are on a contender?
Yeah, definitely. That definitely contributes to it. But also the mentality as far as like from top down, from I'm talking about tippity top all the way down, everybody's on the same page. They invest into their players, into people. When you've got the mentality like that,
then you just know you're being appreciated and they're doing everything to invest into you and you want to invest back into that. So it's like to experience something like that is awesome.
Okay. Whitney is putting me in a position now where it's going to sound like I'm taking up for the Texans here. But let me just real quick on that last
one. I think I know where you're going with this. Yeah. I bet most of our audience is going the same place.
Like the whole thing, you know, it's I get all the rejuvenation part and you're on a good team now, not a bad team. The part where he talks about tippy top on down, okay, that feels like it might be a shot at Cal McNair, who's been nothing but complimentary from a player who took $28 million for 20 tackles. That last part, investing in people, investing in players. Dude, one of the reasons the team is so bad is because they way invested too much in you. They invested $28 million guaranteed for a season and a half of crap out of you. Like, where? I mean, God, Whitney's a nice guy, but like, dude, where do you come off with that? That they don't invest in people. They gave you the most ridiculous contract of the O'Brien era, and that is saying something.
Okay, I actually was going to go in a different direction there, but very valid by you, Sean. Yeah. Very, very valid. Because you're right. I think a lot of the mistakes the Texans have made in the last year or so have not been absences of investments. It's been investing in the wrong spots. Right. Like, they've invested in the wrong people. They've listened to the wrong people at times. So there's that. But then also, all right, read the room a little bit, Whitney. You just went to Green Bay. Had you been paying attention to anything other than Randall Cobb out of Green Bay for the past 4 months? The guy that's been in Green Bay for over a decade would say the exact opposite than what Whitney is saying. So, like, coming in, you've been there for 24 hours. Aaron Rodgers has been bitching nonstop about the Green Bay management from the top down since it dominated the news cycle all during training camp. So let's not act like you just left the pits of hell for Shangri-La or something. Like, Aaron Rodgers has been doing all the exact same things that you said Green Bay is not.
Yeah, dude, I didn't even think of that. Wow, that is yes. Holy crap.
Like, Aaron Rodgers is trying to get the hell out of that place. Yeah. Like, don't sit there and tell me, like, well, this is top-notch the way it's done here, not like the place I used to be.
Whitney does this thing where he's words, and long answers, and boy, he sounds like he knows what he's talking about, and words, and more words, and he I think he tries not to rock the boat. I think he inadvertently rocked the boat there. I think he was trying to pay Green Bay a compliment, and in the process did a drive-by on the Houston Texans. But yeah, like that, you're right, Seth. Like that last part about they really invest in people here. How the hell do you know? You've been in the building 20 minutes. How the hell do you know what they're investing in? Like, they really invest in people. Like, that's
it's what you say, though. I wouldn't have thought anything of it, because that's the nice thing to say when you get to a new place. It's the fact that he kind of juxtaposed the two.
To the Texans.
And he did. He did say from the top down there. And it's... Now that he's not a Texan, Whitney's not allowed to say the things that we say ourselves. he's outside the circle now. He's outside the circle of venom, Sean.
There was another great part of the press conference. I just didn't have time to pull it. He was asked, "Hey, Whitney, I heard you took less money to come here to the Packers instead of going to Kansas City." And he actually entertained the question, like, "Yeah, but you know, it wasn't about money, dude. You had offset language. You're making your guaranteed money from the Texans, and you're not. That's all you're making. He's not getting an additional $1 million or $2 million from whatever team he would have signed with. The way his contract is written is that he's getting his guaranteed money this year. Now he's just getting the rest of it from the Packers for the rest of the season. You know, a chunk of it, whatever the contract says. Like, Whitney's not making another dime more than he would have made to sit on the couch, which I kind of admire. Like, he could have gone home, sat on the couch, collected his money, and then lived to fight another day next year. He wants to go play and go chase a ring. That part I do respect, but that he actually entertained the question, like he was giving up some money. Yeah, you know, but that's not what it was really about. All right.
there might have been language of some variety,
maybe,
I suppose,
maybe.
You know?
I don't know. I'm so triggered about Whitney Merciless right now, and I hate that's the case because I like Whitney. But
God, the one thought I had as you're saying that, you know, about like, okay, well, why would Whitney choose Green Bay versus this or that? And you always think of Reggie White when you think about free agents going to Green Bay. Don't worry, I'm not making a Whitney Merciless Reggie White comparison, but J.J. Watt to the Cardinals, if the Cardinals were to win a Super Bowl, would be the ideal Reggie White comparison.
Yes.
I mean, Reggie White had been on a team. They had been one of the best defensive linemen in the league, didn't win a Super Bowl with the Eagles. Said that he was going to go to a free agency destination where he could help inner city children. He chose Green Bay because that's what God told him to do.
The hard scrabble streets of Green Bay.
That was one of his big things. He wanted to be sure he could help out inner city children. And he went to Green Bay and that's all she wrote. I think likewise, JJ could be that guy for the Cardinals, the defensive lineman who is one of the best in the league. Now Reggie spent, we'll see. We'll see how long JJ spends in Arizona.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, so that was Whitney's performance at his press conference yesterday. Like, they invest in people. The Texans didn't invest enough in you, Whitney. $28 million guaranteed, 4 years, $54 million for like 5 sacks. All right, let's get to some headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
Big headline: Game 6 tonight, Astros and the Boston Red Sox. It'll be Luis Garcia on the mound for the Houston Astros. Dusty Baker revealed that yesterday at the team's workout. And Luis Garcia is hopeful that some of what Framber Valdez did in Game 5 not only rubs off on him for Game 6, but that Framber may have shown a roadmap to get the Astros to the World Series tonight in Game 6.
He did a very good job yesterday, attacking the strike zone. And so executing his pitches, so I think that's the thing that I can get to me and try to do tomorrow.
All right, so that's Luis Garcia. Garcia Game 6. I'm assuming you're Keedy Game 7, and a very, very well rested bullpen for tonight.
And I think too, especially when you talk about these guys in these big moments, where all these pitchers have been in big moments and they've had experience in the postseason, but this is different this year. Because there are no other stud veteran pitches to offset the pressure that is on these guys, on these three young or relatively inexperienced pitchers. I think with one thing you saw with Framber was, okay, simplify. Like, dance with the one who brung you, and that's your sinker, and just pound them with the sinker, pound them with what you're good at. And you see this time and time again with pitchers with the Astros. The analytics folks and Maldonado and everybody else are really good at basically telling guys, like, no, throw your good stuff. Don't overthink this. Don't over-strategize. But I think there's a tendency in the moment for any pitcher, whether they're inexperienced or not, to make it more complex. And if there's anything that was probably pounded home to Luis Garcia, it's that no matter what the situation is, you got to get back to basics, throw your pitches, listen to Maldonado, and just go. Just keep your head down and go. And I really do think it's not just lip service. It's not just a nice story or anything. I think Framber setting that example for Luis Garcia, who, by the way, also had like an actual knee issue that was hurting him in the previous game, I think that's going to go a long, long way. And I'm expecting really good things out of Luis tonight.
Says the knee is okay. Ocho texted this in earlier, and I think this is worth pointing out because it was a big topic after those first three games. With Valdez, Garcia, and Urquidy only making it through 16 total outs between the three of them. Ocho says, I think Luis Garcia's take is valid because I choose to believe pitch tipping was the reason each starter struggled in the first two games. Ocho says first two games. I would stretch that out to the first three games and include Urquidy in there. That those three guys not being able to get out of the third inning and a couple of them not even able to get out of the second inning, I think may have had something to do with it.
The thing about the Red Sox and the Astros, and I find that people outside of those two cities are not fond of this take when I bring it up on the radio, Sean. It's that, look, one of the the thing about their pitch stealing scandals or sign stealing scandals or what have you, or electronic device scandals, is that they are two organizations that are constantly trying to find the little edges. And they pushed it too far in a couple of instances, however many other teams were doing it, whatever. But these two teams really, really push it and try to find every little nook and cranny. And when it comes to the legal part of that, it's perfectly legal between games to look at video and figure out who's tipping pitches or what it is, or within the game watching the iPads and figuring out what the hell's going on. I think both these teams are really good at that. And again, some of that goes back to, and we've heard Roger Clemens talk about this. We've heard other pitchers talk about this. When you get into the cauldron of the playoffs, the younger, more inexperienced pitchers might really revert back to their bad habits. And whether that's holding onto the ball a little longer when you're getting your grip on your curveball, raising your glove a little higher, holding it a little closer to your chest. Like all those, like those veteran batters and those really smart teams like the Astros and Red Sox pick up on it. So yeah, I think that all the nerds for the Astros have been hard at work figuring out whatever the hell Luis Garcia and Urquidy and Framber may have been doing in those first few
games. They've scored one run, the Red Sox have, since Xander Bogaert's home run in the bottom of the first inning of game four.
Sean, to Red Sox fans' credit, that's where I generally, because look, there have been some accusations of cheating and somebody acted like whistling before a couple of Astros at bats as signs that they're stealing signs, what have you. The vast majority of Red Sox fans I saw yesterday, like when I kind of like tried to look at it objectively and look at comments on articles in Boston papers and everything, most of them are saying like, listen, shut the hell up. All right. Like shut the hell up. They scored one run. Like, spare me your accusations of cheating and what have you. So to their credit, most Red Sox fans, I think the same way most Astros fans would probably be, kind of discount any notion or accusations of cheating. It's something that's kind of fun or make a joke about, but for the most part, these are the two teams that are not going to be risking it, because especially with the Astros, the owner is just flat out. Basically, I think the owner would do as close as he could to actually, nailing you to the wall if you got caught doing anything like that.
Text message, Lance McCullers. Have you guys heard anything about his availability for the possible World Series? Actually, our Adam Spillane does a great job covering the Astros for us here at Sports Radio 610. Went back and forth with Dusty Baker about that very thing.
Dusty, has Lance started throwing?
No.
Do you anticipate that he'd be able to start throwing in the next day or so?
Probably not. There's no change.
All right, so there you go on Lance McCullers. And I think, Seth, it's been going this way. Like, the fact that Lance, when he was asked about it, I think it was on Saturday he did media, and he was asked about it. He's like, well, I got to start throwing first, then I can start pitching. But when are you going to start throwing? I don't know. So this is who they're rolling with, man. As you pointed out earlier, the nucleus of this pitching rotation, we hope Lance will be back, and Lance will be back in 2022. But other than Lance, the core of this pitching rotation is going to be, for the next few years, Framber Valdez, Luis Garcia, and Jose Urquidy. These are the three guys that are going to have to bring the ship into shore, not just in this series, but the next series as well. That's it.
What if he's lying?
Who, Lance?
Yeah, in a good way. Like, what if Dusty and Lance are just doing a little bit of gamesmanship here? Saying like, yeah.
I don't see it happening. I don't know. Do you think Lance is Lance somebody who would want to make a big entrance like that? Maybe, like all of a sudden he would he would be hailed as a hero here in town. Like, you look at him pitching through this.
He's already done it. I mean, you know what? Lance has seen exactly what happens. He pitched through a partially torn UCL, something that I think like maybe 1% of major league pitchers would do. He did that and barely got any credit for it. If anything, more Astros fans will point out how bad he was in the playoffs that year. Like, yeah, you son of a bitch. He had a torn UCL. Like, so I don't think Lance is going to try to play it up any more than he needs to. It would be strictly gamesmanship. It's not trying to be dramatic. It's like saying, like, yeah, like, try to put it sound, like, cause for Dusty to even answer that question like he did, I feel like, okay, I think maybe Lance is actually a little bit more ready than they're letting on. In Dusty's mind, no, he's not throwing, he's pitching. There's a subtle difference there.
Okay, semantics.
Maybe he's throwing with a softball or something, but like in his mind, like, okay, that doesn't count because he's throwing with a softball. So there you go.
Okay. So the Astros tonight, game six. By the way, Clint Sterner and Ron the Show Hughley will be out at Crawford and Congress again at a way out bail bonds right there in the parking lot, tent set up. They'll be out there all afternoon. So if you are walking to the stadium, a lot of foot traffic along Crawford and Congress there, stop by, say hello to the fellas, and looking forward to that. Let's go to the Texans and the Arizona Cardinals. Arizona Cardinals, Sunday, 3:25 kickoff. We will have that game for you right here on Sports Radio 610. Seth and I have Texans Countdown starting at about 12:25, 3 hours in advance of kickoff. Seth, I feel like we have not really touched on the X's and O's of this game at all week. And I think I feel that way because we have not touched on the X's and O's at all this week on this game. Have we not talked about things the Texans can do to make the Cardinals uncomfortable? I'm not going to sit here and say, what can they do to win the game? It's a 17-point spread.
Yeah.
I mean, they could win. It's like teams have won games outright as 17-point underdogs before. It happens like once every presidential administration. But in these other games with these big spreads, we have at some point said, okay, here's some things they can do to make them uncomfortable. You and I have not done that yet this week. Is it because there is nothing the Texans can do to make the Cardinals feel uncomfortable? Or is it because the Astros are making their run to the World Series here?
I think it's more it's a combination of things. It's that the Astros are obviously going to win out in any competition for like people's attention or anything.
Yeah.
It's going to be pretty routine for as long as Davis Mills is starting for the Texans to be 16 or 17 point underdogs on the road.
Yes.
I think. So I think people are choosing to care about the Astros. I do think that there's obviously some interesting things going on in this game with the Cardinals, and there is a chance that the Texans could pull off a huge upset on the road, obviously. The part that's interesting to me is exactly, okay, how do the Texans, which this defense does not seem to have advanced with the times. Our greatest fear is about Lovie Smith coming in and doing the exact same thing he did in 2005, despite the changing times and not having the same personnel. Those greatest fears have been realized. I just don't know if there's anything he can really do about it. But they line up, they play what they're, the vanilla, what they're showing is what they play. It's not like Lovie Smith can get exotic with a blitz or anything, but the one big difference that's happened, and Daniel Jeremiah pointed this out, with the advent of so many athletic quarterbacks now, like Kyler Murray, defenses are, they don't care as much about containing the passer. And it used to be whenever you faced an athletic quarterback, all the defensive linemen would say all week long was like, oh, you got to keep him in the pocket, got to keep him in the pocket. Problem is, Kyler Murray's gotten pretty damn good from the pocket. And what you can do, I mean, he's lethal outside the pocket too, but at least if you flush him outside the pocket, then all of a sudden you reduce the number of options for him. You turn it into a half-field football game. And I think defenses have gotten better because they've seen more and more of it, of reacting to the plays that you can run when a quarterback rolls right or rolls left and all of his reads get cut in half. Defenses have responded to that better. So you don't worry as much about keeping Kyler Murray in the pocket, per se. You do have to have linebackers and safeties that are fast enough to chase him down when he leaves the pocket. So when you're talking about who's spying Kyler Murray, I think like Grugier Hill might play a big impact in this game. Mm. Grugier Hill's probably the linebacker who's most capable of spying Kyler Murray. And it might come down to if the Texans are going to have a chance. Okay, can Grugier Hill knock Kyler Murray out of bounds, you know, within a few yards of the line of scrimmage a few times instead of letting him really get going?
Yeah, I would also mention, too, maybe one of the reasons why, and those are all, I like all those points, Seth. I think maybe just examining why we've been so sparse on analyzing this game, other than the fact that it appears to be a complete mismatch on paper. There's been a lot of news around the team. The Deshaun Watson trade rumors popping up again, that took precedence. Whitney Mercilus getting cut was significant this week. And I think the story with this game has less to do with the actual matchups in the game, and more so the story with this game has always been, since the schedule came out, J.J. Watt and DeAndre Hopkins going against their old team. J.J. Watt met with the media yesterday. Thought this was an interesting one. You kind of touched on this a little bit earlier, Seth. The J.J. Watt we're used to seeing through all these years in Houston was this transcendent freelancer who was allowed to kind of go into business for himself out there on the field because he was so explosive and so good. He's still a very good football player. They are using him differently, though, here in Arizona.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Whatever they ask of me, I do. You know, if they want me to play inside, I play inside. If they want to bump me to the outside, I'll go outside. They want to put me on the nose, I'll go on the nose. Whatever it takes to win. And I think that our team has that mentality here, and I think it's obviously a big reason why we're successful is nobody cares who's making the plays. Nobody cares who's getting the credit. All we want to do is get the one number that matters, and that's the win.
Yeah, and, you know, there's something to that when you're a veteran player on a team forever and you've got kind of free license to do what you do. I think JJ got used to doing that, but somewhere along the way, his athletic ability changed somewhat because of all the injuries. And now he has to be more of a rote disciplined player. And he's doing a really good job of it. I mean, like when he's supposed to play in a certain gap, he's blowing that gap up. When he's supposed to take on a double team, he's taking on a double team. And he's fitting in versus the run, I think, with more discipline and predictability than he used to. So like he's aged very well in how he's handling his physical aging, and that's meaning very good things for that defense. And he's also the biggest thing I noticed, it almost reminded me when he was a young player, Sean. When he was a young player in his rookie year, he came very close to making a lot of sacks and a lot of plays, but he was just a little out of place, or he was a little slow, or he was a little uncomfortable getting there, where now that he's going on into his 11th year, he's been very, very close to making some sacks, to making more big plays, but he might be a little step too slow, or he can't quite break down the way he used to. So kind of like as humans, when we become elderly, we become more like infants. JJ, like in his elder years as a football player, is a little bit more like he was in his younger years too. But he's still making a big impact. Like he's had multiple hits on the quarterback. He's had multiple tackles for a loss in these last couple weeks. He's had a sack. He injured Baker Mayfield. He's done a lot in the last few weeks.
Yeah. By the way, credit Case Keenum last night, got the victory in place of Baker Mayfield on Thursday Night Football last night for the Cleveland Browns. Yeah, someone texted in earlier, guys, he only has one sack. JJ's irrelevant. Well, then you're not watching the games, you know?
Yeah, no. Like not even close.
It's a poor take.
Yeah, like yeah, and that's now like sacks don't matter nearly as much as people want them to. They do matter. I mean, in some guys like Clowney, for instance, is a guy that his low sacks are significant and relevant just because it kind of shows that he lacks the ability to bend at the end of his pass rush and close the deal. But it doesn't tell the whole story.
Right.
Because he makes big impacts on football plays. And JJ is clearly that guy. And he's pressuring and hitting the quarterback at one of the highest rates in the league. He's just not getting the guy on the ground. And I do think that does tell a story about what JJ has become. But the sack numbers don't tell the story about how big of an impact he's having on what is a very good defense as
you're
well.
You're listening to KLT and KLT HD2 and Odyssey Station. I guess the best way I can put it with respect to the sacks, Seth, is sacks are important. Who gets credit for the sacks is a very flawed – it's a flawed stat.
Yeah.
A lot of times the guy that's causing the sack is not the guy who eventually is the one that brings the quarterback to the ground.
Right.
It can be coverage, it can be a guy running into a sack, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and but I do, like, it's just to say that he's not making an impact because he doesn't have sacks is just, it's a foolish thing to say,
yep.
That's all. I'm not trying to be insulting or anything, it's just, it's foolish. It really doesn't tell the accurate picture of what he's doing.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
For a tech
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.